When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Foreign policy. There's a new name in the pantheon of presidential contenders, and that's Kamala Harris of California. Ms. Harris has done us the favor of endorsing Joe Biden's record in office these last years, and therefore we can assume that there is no distance between the Harris foreign policy and the Biden foreign policy. But there's much to say about the Biden foreign policy, and I welcome my colleague and friend, Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, importantly, Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State in the final years of the Trump administration, observing all these closed rooms where diplomacy is key to understanding the world. We begin in China and asking the question about Ms. Harris and Mr. Biden's China policy. The headline in Bloomberg is colorful. China's richest man risks losing crown after $13 billion wipeout. Nongfu founder Zhang well slips amid competition. Mary, a very good evening to you. China's richest man is a member of the Chinese Communist Party, and if he's not, he's in perilous moments. However, assuming that he's safe and that he's taking care of his family, it's not his money. Does the Biden administration now acknowledge that it's not his money, and that the Chinese Communist Party is a threat to fair play and justice everywhere? And can we assume Ms. Harris inherits that opinion? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, it was interesting to see how the Biden-Harris administration behaved at the beginning of its administration versus today when it comes to China. Specifically, their instinct was to conciliate, to appease, to have dialogue when they took office, believing that the Trump team had simply been too bombastic, too aggressive, and hyperbolic in the way that it characterized the behavior from China and the threat that China posed, not just to its own people, but to the free world. Well, what they found as they attempted to have these dialogues is that China continued its bullying behavior. They started to push him around. Recall the meeting with Jake Sullivan and Anthony Blinken in Alaska, where the Chinese delegation publicly berated them, embarrassed them. And so I think because of Beijing's behavior, the Biden team adopted many of the same strategies that the Trump team did because they had to. They realized that appeasement wouldn't work. Even though they have returned to dialogue, they haven't lifted the tariffs. They have pushed forward with closer ties to our friends and allies in Asia Pacific. So would a President Harris meaningfully change that approach? I think it would be hard for her to do so, not because she wouldn't want to. I think the Democrat Party instinct is to appease, but because China's bullying behavior isn't going to change. And it's for that reason that I think that she and her foreign policy advisors, who I think would be running the show, I don't think foreign policy is really a strength of the vice president, that they would need to continue this tougher approach.
And that's consistent with Mr. Trump's presentation so far. So can I assume, generally speaking, I mean, there are always details, that the two administrations competitively anticipating one of them's going to win have very little differences when it comes to understanding that the Chinese Communist Party is the threat. Do they both acknowledge that?
They do, and there's certainly a bipartisan consensus on Capitol Hill. And that's the result of the work that we did in the Trump administration to simply present facts every day to the American people about the Chinese Communist Party's behavior, whether it was in international institutions or in trade organizations or the work that they had done to embed Huawei into telecommunications systems all over the world to spy on us, the influence operations within our borders. Any number of things. Every day we just released more information, more facts, and that changed hearts and minds. And it woke up not just America, but our, again, friends and allies around the world to the threat. And you see this reflected in the behavior of companies and investors, where foreign direct investment into China has fallen off of a cliff. And companies are nearshoring. They're moving operations, if they can, to places like Mexico, because they recognize that the environment is not changing in China. Xi Jinping sits atop a cabal of people. He is the supreme leader, but the party elites run the country for themselves, and they have no interest in liberalizing. And so that risk profile is only going to get more significant, severe, and complicated as time goes on. So whoever inherits the presidency or wins the presidency, rather, in the United States, is going to face a much more aggressive communist China.
We're on the eve of the Paris Olympics 2024. I go to the Bloomberg page for Europe. Paris Olympics can help unify a fractured city. We wish Paris well, but I mention this because the foreign policy of the Biden administration has been described to me as Mr. Biden is an old-fashioned Atlanticist, welcoming to the European Union, welcoming to NATO. I presume, Mary, that that will continue under a potential Harris administration, welcoming, though Ms. Harris is from the Pacific side of the United States. There will be no gap to my understanding. How do you see it, Mary?
Well, I think there's a kind of an allergy to President Trump in Europe because he asked the Europeans to essentially live up to their promises when it came to things like NATO funding. He exposed the absurdity of the Paris Climate Accords, which are basically just a money transfer to places like China that don't need it, that continue to pollute. President Trump was an uncomfortable ally because he wanted the Europeans to step up and play a larger role in their own defense and to focus on what really mattered today versus some hypothetical situation 100 years from now. So I think, you know, Kamala would be a welcome relief for the Europeans. I mean, you mentioned Paris. I mean, the Paris mayor, Anne Hidalgo, is a socialist who, you know, shares many of the same policy positions that Kamala Harris does. So I think, is she an Atlanticist? Again, I don't think that the vice president has spent much time on foreign policy. You know, her career, as you noted, started in California in local offices there and then, you know, was built into a Senate career and then vice president. So there's just really not a lot of exposure there to the capitals of Europe or their concerns. And it's one reason why I think that when it comes to foreign policy, if the Democrats win again, it's largely going to be technocrats like Jake Sullivan, like Antony Blinken, who are cautious, highly educated, but unschooled in the brutal ways of the world. And I think it would continue the erosion of U.S. deterrence, which, as you and I have discussed many times, John, has led to this global chaos that we have seen unfold. I think it would be dangerous. And so we'll see what happens, but foreign policy certainly should be one of the issues that is discussed as we get closer to the election.
Net zero. Europe is simpatico with California on the ambition for climate change and what is to be done. I note that Mr. Bloomberg himself is a great contributor, I believe, to the NGOs that are responsible for net zero. Fires threaten Mediterranean after world record's hottest day. So I can presume that Ms. Harris, whatever her foreign policy comes to be, should she be in the White House, will be completely in line with European opinion that something must be done and it's very expensive and the public doesn't buy it, but there we go. Is that your assumption, Mary?
Yes, it is.
So we'll move to one other area that is contentious, foreign policy, and that's migration. Europe, I mentioned, is challenged by migration in the same fashion America is. There's no difference between us, none whatsoever. Australia's challenged, New Zealand's challenged, all of the Commonwealth countries, English-speaking, are challenged by migration, perhaps from the global south, perhaps economic refugees. And in any event, right now, the striking fact is that the Biden administration has no policy that I could name quickly, perhaps if I had several paragraphs, but I don't. Ms. Harris inherits that no policy I can name quickly. Do we anticipate she filling it in these subsequent days of speechmaking, Mary?
Yes, certainly, because immigration ranks among the top three issues that American voters care about. And the vice president was put in charge of the border by President Biden, sort of handed this poison chalice. But she really, you know, didn't do very much. And she didn't visit some of the hardest hit areas, didn't propose significant legislation. In fact, that the legislative ideas came from a Republican senator, James Langford. So she will have to address the issue. I suspect that she will blame the problem on Republicans for refusing to move forward with the Langford proposal. I don't know if that will work for her or not, but regardless, whoever gets to the White House will have to deal with the surge at the border, because it's not just a legal issue and unfair to the people who came in legally. It's a criminal issue. It's a drug issue. It's a human trafficking issue. It's a national security issue where, you know, we've caught several suspected terrorists, and God knows how many have come over who we haven't caught. So it's a real problem. It's turning some of these border areas red. It's cementing Texas as a red state, for instance. So I think that it's a tough issue for her, because she is associated with it politically.
Mary Kissel is Executive Vice President at Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. I'm John Batchelor.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.